football on Off the Ball.
Again, with Bodo, I can't believe they haven't won in the Champions League. Whenever I've seen them play, which isn't a lot, but I've seen them knowing that City would be there this year. They're energetic.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday Night's Off the Ball. We're with you until 10 o'clock this evening. And if you were unsure about how bad yesterday was for Arsenal FC, well, you just need to take a look at the Dublin Airport Twitter account, because they posted yesterday evening a photo of two men in the departures lounge bottling some complimentary tap water with the caption, "Passengers doing an Arsenal at our water station this evening." So coming up tonight, we're going to figure out if Dublin Airport getting on board your case is something to show signs that your entire thing is going to fall into a state of doom over the next couple of months, or if actually Arsenal are going to be okay. They're still 4 points ahead at the top of the league. We are, of course, throughout this evening, going to give credit as well to Manchester United, to Michael Carrick. In fact, we're going to get Andy Mitten on the football show to luxuriate in the apparent greatness of Michael Carrick's Manchester United. So that's coming up between 9 and 10. Between 8 and 9, we're going to have Monday Night Rugby with Gerry Thornley and Fiona Hayes. The Six Nations launch was happening earlier today in Edinburgh, so we're also going to hear from Andy Farrell on the deepening crisis for Ireland at Loosehead Prop. And then from 7:30, on our bumper news round, we're going to drop Gaelic Games correspondent Tommy Rooney into the mix to give us a rundown of all the intercounty action over the course of the weekend. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp message. Keith Tracy, you're very welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Owen. How are you?
Very well. Stephen Doyle, how are you?
I'm all good, Owen. Good evening.
You were at the Emirates Stadium yesterday, Steve-o. Any messages you want to bring Arsenal fan Keith Tracy here from yesterday? Was it as doom-ridden and nervous as everybody's telling us?
Jeez, at one point there we had four Arsenal fans in the room. We had Sean out there who does some of our news bulletins. We had Keith, yourself, Gerry Thornley. I would say we should actually have, instead of the news round, let's have an Arsenal therapy session. And I'll just...
I'd love it.
I'll get you all to sit back in the... look, you know something? I went over there thinking... this Arsenal-Manchester United game, you know the old cliche, iconic Premier League game, and era-defining fixture and all that. And it was for many years, Ferguson versus Wenger, Keane versus Vieira. And we got a great few years out of it. And then, of course, over the last number of years, it's been Man City-Liverpool. And now Arsenal are starting to come good again. But I was going up to the ground yesterday and I kind of felt this feels like it could be one of the old school classic Arsenal United fixtures. There was just something. And actually, interestingly, Roy Keane, I was watching back the Sky Sports stuff last night. He said, I could smell it coming to the ground. Yes, I could smell something for United, you know. And I was like, I kind of felt that as well. And I spoke to a couple of journalistic colleagues who hail from around the Manchester area. And look, I got to declare here, I'm completely neutral. I don't follow either side. And they're all kind of saying, yeah, there's something about this United team. And I was thinking to myself all the way. I spoke to John Duggan on before we did our match commentary yesterday. He said, give us a prediction. I said, I think it's score or draw, but I think United could do this by a goal. You know, and it was all down to the fact that just this, the last couple of Arsenal games, they've started to show this mental fragility again with Liverpool, with Nottingham Forest, and we're kind of starting to see maybe some of the cracks that we saw after Paris Saint-Germain last season. Arteta kind of losing the head, and when he starts losing the head, it kind of feeds into the squad. Now, I'm not saying this is the end of Arsenal season. There's a long way to go here, you know, but it just felt that there was that narrative from certain, you know, people in the media and journalists and stuff saying that there was an edginess in the Emirates. I remember me and you spoke on last week, maybe you were saying you were over there watching a game and I'd been at the Spurs match and we kind of agreed. I didn't feel that kind of edginess that a lot of people were talking about. I just felt a really brilliant atmosphere at the Arsenal ground, you know, and I just couldn't see what I was being told by certain people in the media. But yesterday I felt it. I really felt it yesterday. And there was Arsenal supporters walking out of the ground 6-7 minutes before the end. And I'm kind of thinking,
what was that about?
Your team, they're only down by a goal. You need to get an equaliser here to keep, you know, pushing for the title. Where are you going?
Because it's like, I know, Keith, you're probably going to disagree with a lot of what Steve was saying in terms of like how disastrous yesterday is for Arsenal. But one thing that's inarguable is that you could see dozens of empty seats. Yeah. On television, watching that game, when you are one goal down you are between 4 and 5 points ahead in the Premier League, that is unforgivable as a fan base.
Yeah, semi-final of the EFL Cup, played 7 in the Champions League, won 7.
And it gets a little bit sticky towards the end against Manchester United, and they're running for the exits. It's not any, I think, any club in the Premier League fighting for relegation, fighting for the title. Your fans have got to stay to the end, especially like if you're 4-0 down, you say fair enough, go and miss the traffic. But 2-1 down with a couple of minutes to go, and the game's in the melting pot.
If there were 1,500 family emergencies, I apologise if that was the case, it looked really, really bad.
Yeah. But I say as well, like. So I'm sitting there. See, we've got an unusual commentary position because we're in with mainly written media. So some of the other radio guys were further down the rows. So we're kind of very close to the Arsenal, a pocket of Arsenal supporters. Not say pocket, a stand of Arsenal supporters. And, you know, when you're on the radio, you, of course, when a goal is scored, you're animated and you're much louder than the Arsenal fans around you, especially when it's a Manchester United goal. And there was another journalist, I'm not going to say he's more so reporting on the game, not doing full commentary. And he was from Manchester. He was a proper Manc, and I found it after he's a United supporter. And he was getting really into it. And like, so when United were scoring, there's the Arsenal supporters all go quiet. And then there's me and Gary Breen, you know, giving this really loud commentary of the goal, plus the Manc behind us. And, you know, as the first United goal goes in, they're turning around kind of giving us these dirty looks. But I noticed this young boy, and he was only about 12 years of age. And he reminded me of, do you remember the riots in Lansdowne Road, that famous picture of that poor child that got caught up in the middle of the Lansdowne riots? And he was, you know, I think he's been interviewed since. He's much older and really upset. And I remember being at that game as well, and I was almost in tears. But this kid, I kept looking at him, and he turned around, he looked exactly like that child. And he was like, his eyes were getting watery. And I was like, oh my God. And I was like nearly holding back my commentary of the winning United goal, because I was like, I just felt so bad for this kid. You know, he's 12 years of age, going to watch his Arsenal team absolutely mess up their, you know, this chance against Manchester United to really put their foot down on the Premier League title race. And I was just like, I just never forget that kid and his eyes looking back at us kind of going, how could you do this to us?
Well, you know what, Steve-O, he's never going to forget you and Gary Breen either. You have scarred this child forever. So I hope you're happy. Just on that point of the nervousness and that seeping into the team, because if that is the real situation now at Arsenal, then you can make the case that they're on a trajectory towards bottling this situation in the league. What are your thoughts on that?
I think they lost a game of football. I don't think it's any more than that. In Arsenal's last 10 games, they've won 7, drew 2 and lost 1. Yet people are trying to tell me they're bottling it, and you know, performances haven't been great. They won in the San Siro a couple of days ago against Inter Milan.
When there wasn't a whole pile at stake for Arsenal. Like, can I just offer that? I know that it was basically their, not their second team, they maybe five or six of yesterday's starting team played midweek. This Champions League situation does not put you to the pin of your collar in terms of pressure. It will do in terms of standard of footballer. And in terms of a deep squad, Arsenal have as deep a squad in terms of quality as anybody else in the continent, I would argue. There was no real pressure on that trip to the San Siro. The real pressure fixtures of the last month have been at home to Liverpool and at home to Manchester United.
Yeah, I get that. But the reason there was no pressure on the Inter Milan game was because Arsenal won 6 out of 6 before that. So Arsenal have earned the right to say, not much pressure on this one. So you can't use that against them. There's no pressure in this. They've earned that right. They've won the games and the build-up to that. And to be fair, I was saying to all my Arsenal mates in the build-up to the game, put the kids out. Who cares? We've earned the right to say, we don't need to win this, we're all right. And I imagine that he will against it's Almaty, isn't it, Kira?
Almaty, yeah.
I imagine that Arteta will put the kids out, or you know, a version of the kids. But yeah, like, I don't know where the panic is coming from. I listened to Gary Neville's commentary and the words he's using. It's like we're 6 points behind. We were 10 points ahead, now we're 6 points behind, and it's all doom and gloom. It's like, there's 40-odd points to play for and we're 4 points ahead. But people in November are saying the league's over, yous have won it. That was never, ever the case. We are going to get pushed. Manchester City are a brilliant team that aren't quite playing well. They will be close. They will be there or thereabouts when Erling Haaland is getting north of 20. He'll probably end up near 40 Premier League goals this season. So they're going to be there or thereabouts, but I don't think City will be perfect. I expect Aston Villa to come off the boil as we get closer to the end of the season. I still think it's a two-horse race, and Arsenal are in a brilliant, brilliant position. And at the start of the season, I didn't think Arsenal would win the league. So to be 4 points ahead after 23 games, I'm over the moon. Like, I just don't buy into the narrative that everybody else is trying to give me that, oh, they're ahead, but they're bottling it. We're 4 points ahead after 23 games. Is it the problem?
Is it the way in which yesterday happened, as in Zubimendi gifting Brian Mbeumo that opportunity, which, to be fair, he had a bit of work to do to finish off. Is it actually looking at the scene of Gabriel prone on the ground after Cunha has just fired in the winner, the sense of despair around Arsenal? And a lot of people commented on the same thing after they conceded the late winner against Aston Villa, Buendia's goal, that there was a sense of a catastrophe had just befallen this team in terms of their body language.
Yeah, but look, it's always going to be a sucker punch when you lose a game in the last couple of kicks. It's going to hurt, and you want it to hurt. If the Arsenal players went off smiling and joking after the game, you think something's not quite right there. Again, I go back to Zubimendi making a mistake. I don't think he'll do that again between now and the end of the season. I don't think there's a team in the Premier League that will be as ruthless as Manchester United, where I know I've mentioned it, but United's XG 0.71. Arsenal defended okay in that game. If you look at the XG, to give up 0.71 of an XG, you're thinking, might concede one. So if we score two, we'll win it. I think this is just one of those crazy games that United came out on top on. And I give United an awful lot of credit. I thought our players were brilliant. The work rate, you know, Maguire as part of a back four, it's just sensible, isn't it? Just sensible.
He was very good yesterday. I saw he got the man of the match. I would have given it to Casemiro. I thought some of the stops that Casemiro made in the box for United yesterday, I think some of them went unnoticed almost. Like, he just kind of kept getting himself into the right place at the right time. He was just brilliant. Maybe it's the fact that he's leaving Old Trafford. All of a sudden the pressure's off him. He's like turning into these great performances. Just on United, there's a couple of observations. I think their first test under Michael Carrick is this Saturday against Fulham.
Yeah, I agree.
Or Sunday. Sorry, we'll have that game and off the ball on Sunday. That's their first test, because look, it's easy to get up for City. It's easy to get up for Arsenal. Let's see how United get on at home at Old Trafford when they're going to have more of the ball. If you look through the statistics of all those big wins, City, Arsenal, Liverpool, even under Ruben Amorim, they're the games when they've had less possession than of the football than their opposition. Let's see how they get on at Old Trafford when maybe Fulham say to United, here, you have the ball. We're happy to defend, soak up the pressure. That's when we'll see United tested. Because, and again, I said in the summertime, I thought Mbeumo and Cunha, they were successful in Wolves and Brentford teams that soaked up pressure when they were hitting teams on the break and running into space. But we've seen with them, with United, when they have to be part of an attack that has to break down a deep-lying defence, they can struggle. And that's going to be the real test for Carrick and for those two players. On a positive note for United, isn't it incredible how little we are talking about their goalkeeper over the last kind of half a season, or since Lomans came in? Like, he pulled off two magnificent saves yesterday. The one down to the left in the second half, just beside the post, and then the quick reaction to the header in the first half. He's not perfect, but he's a really, really good goalkeeper, and he's a lot more assured, I think, than what they had there before. And as I said, the fact that nobody's talking about him just goes to show you how good he's been for them.
23, I think, Lamans.
Yeah.
There's going to be learnings in there for him, but I think he's been good. You see his interview after the game as well. They said, like, what has Michael Carrick changed? And he said, to be honest, nothing. He hasn't done anything special. He's just give us a little bit of rope and go and play football, lads. And I think it's brilliant, you know, the Ruben Amorim coming in. I just think he was trying to give the flower too much water. He was trying to do too much at once. And what I think a stick that was used to beat him with, I don't understand why it was Casemiro or Mainu. Why could it not be both? And Bruno Fernandes a little bit further ahead. He could still play his system with little tactical tweaks within it. The fact that he went, well, Mainu's not playing because he's up against Casemiro. Why is he? You can play three in there, you know that, don't you? It just seems strange, and I think that came around as a stick to beat him with. And obviously Kobbie Mainoo over the last two games has been really, really good. You forget that he started in the European final for England against Italy. He's a good player, and I think that was something that was really irking the Manchester United fans, the fact that he could have lost Kobbie Mainoo.
Yeah. It was the Spain final, wasn't it? Or was it the...
Sorry, Spain. Not Italy, yeah.
We will get stuck into some of the reaction to yesterday at the Emirates. Where do you want to start, Steve-O?
Yeah, well, just speak about Manchester United. Yes, indeed. The reaction to yesterday. Harry Maguire is the player I was actually taking a clip from yesterday. From the I lost my script there for a moment on. Let's be honest here. Harry Maguire dedicated the win against Arsenal to the travelling supporters. Arsenal missed the chance to go 7 points clear at the top of the Premier League after losing 3-2 against the Red Devils. Michael Carrick, the interim head coach, has started his time in charge by beating the top two teams in the Premier League, having won against Manchester City last week. Maguire spoke to Patrick Davidson on Sky Sports after the game about how he felt they had the attacking threat required to win.
Well, I thought the first 20 minutes they started really well. They put us on the back foot so much, but we watched the game against Liverpool, and they did the same in the first half there. But after 20 minutes, I felt like we got a grip of the game, and we started being a little bit more brave on the ball. And when we started playing through the middle and we're playing finding passes through the lines, I felt like we could really open them up. And I think we was comfortable the second half. Obviously, their biggest threat was set plays. They managed to score one. Obviously, it was a scrappy goal to concede, something that we'll have to look at. But like I said, we have quality that we can hurt teams, and we've managed to do that today.
Still singing behind you.
No, these fans deserve it. It's been a tough couple of years for them, and results like last week and tonight or this evening is what they deserve.
Yeah, Gary Breen on with me on commentary duty yesterday, and he assessed the week to come for the Gunners, who played Kairat, as we mentioned, in the Champions League before going to Fortress Elland Road.
Yeah, Arsenal got themselves into a brilliant position, top of the Champions League. I expect them to rest a lot of players and give these players a breather, just allow their minds to have a step back from it, just reassess where they are, that they're in a great position. But you're quite right to reference Leeds in terms of what Daniel Farker has done. Going to that back five, it's rejuvenated Leeds, and it'll be a tough one. The atmosphere will be white hot at Elland Road, but they've got to do it. They've got to respond, and Arsenal normally do, and that's the challenge ahead of these players. I'd expect them to be firing in all cylinders come next weekend.
Well, the opinions coming into us are wild and varied on Arsenal, as you can imagine. Patrick has been in touch to say another poor performance by the Gunners. They'll be lucky to finish third if this form carries on. Barry, meanwhile, says it's Arteta's negativity that's going to lose the title for them. They were so negative in the Liverpool game because he went for the don't lose approach after Manchester City drew against Brighton the day before. Meanwhile, Larry says Arsenal were just wrecked yesterday. So flat. Clearly overcooked. Relax. Gunners still favourites. Arsenal do need to start playing to Gyökeres' strength, though, instead of backing their wide men to keep cutting in. Mick, meanwhile, I'm not sure, is it our producer Mick who's off today texting from home? Anyway, this Mick says, if Arsenal don't win the league this year, they have to look beyond Arteta. Style of play has become so negative, and if it doesn't result in major honours, his head should be on the line. This is the worst Premier League quality-wise in a long time. And it could be the best Premier League ever in terms of entertainment if all these storylines keep going towards the end of the season, and maybe the middle tier teams are better than we've ever seen before. There's that argument as well. One theme that often comes up with Arsenal, though, is whenever they have a poor result, whenever they lose a game, Arteta's head has got to be on a spike. I mean, after the Liverpool game earlier in the season, got to sack Arteta. I think there will be a really gleeful response from every non-Arsenal fan out there if Mikel Arteta does not win this Premier League.
I don't think he needs to go. Honestly, I there's only a certain amount of trophies up for grab every single season. Arsenal have gone close with the Champions League. It was a PSG that beat them last season, the eventual winners. Manchester City, Liverpool in the Premier League. There's some really good teams around, you know, in Europe and the Premier League. I take on board that this is probably Arsenal's best ever chance given how poor Manchester City are. But I would also argue that Aston Villa, Manchester United, Chelsea, Liverpool, Fulham, Brentford, Newcastle, they're all banana peels. There's banana peels all over the Premier League, and I wouldn't be surprised if a Brentford were to go and beat Arsenal, if a Spurs beat Arsenal, if a Fulham beat a Manchester City. I've said it before, I don't think Manchester City will be perfect. I don't think Villa will be perfect between now and the end, and I also don't think Arsenal will. Everybody will drop points, and it's going to be up and down and all around. But after 23 games, if somebody said Arsenal would be 4 points ahead after 23 games, they'd bit their hands off.
I want to start a petition to get Keith Tracy as the face of Arsenal fans. Everybody's like, Arsenal fans are idiots, they're reactive, they're overly emotional. That's the most measured response I've ever heard from an Arsenal fan. I mean, I was having a mini breakdown driving up from Kerry after watching that Arsenal game last night. I was just like, you know, almost kicked my television in watching that yesterday. So it's good to hear some sort of measured approach to it. Finally, an Arsenal fan with a reasoned approach to life. What's next, Levo?
Look how many clubs are just standing still at the minute and stay. Look at Spurs with Thomas Frank, United with Amorim a couple of months ago. You're looking and thinking it's going to take an awful lot to get them clubs going in the right direction. Arsenal are going in the right direction.
I'll just say quickly, the football has regressed a bit. You think when they were playing at their best under Arteta, it was like that trio down the right-hand side, Saka, White and Odegaard, playing some beautiful football. You had Partey holding the midfield. Then you had Xhaka making those runs down the left-hand side, the left channel, linking up Martinelli, linking up with the whoever's playing centre-forward. Like, they were playing really good football then, and now it's just terrible to watch. But look, yeah, it's all about winning, isn't it? I think he needs to win a trophy this season.
No, you're 100% right. He needs to win a major trophy this season. Let's move on,
yeah,
Steve-O.
Look, the people's champions, Aston Villa. Well, they kept second place City down, or kept with second place City with a 2-0 win at Newcastle. Chelsea in fourth got a 3-1 victory against London rivals Crystal Palace, and Nottingham Forest moved 5 points clear of the relegation zone with a 2-0 win at Brentford. Everton playing tonight at home to Leeds United. Leeds are 5 points clear of the relegation zone. They've only got 6 points away from home, just one win. That was against Wolves. But they are playing against a depleted, or what could be a depleted, Everton side. We were just waiting for the teams to come through there. Jake O'Brien, of course, had a brilliant game against Aston Villa. We had that one, Fiona, off the ball last week. They start with Pickford in goal on the right of the defence, going over to the left. It's Patterson, Tarkovsky, O'Brien, Mikulenko, Idrissa Gueye back from the Senegal AFCON celebrations in midfield with James Garner. And so is Njai, as we plays in midfield, Armstrong and McNeil, and Barry is up front. A lead starting with Darlow in goal. It's a back three of Bornau, Rodon and Strouk. Of course, Biol is out with injury. Bogle and Justin the wing back. Stack is back into the team after his recent injury spell, with Ampadu and Gruev in midfield. Aronson up front with the former Toffee, Dominic Calvert-Lewin. That kicks off at 8 o'clock.
Very good. Now let's move on to the Scottish Premiership. Celtic unhappy with the ref.
Yep, they are appealing that red card given to Austin Trusty. He was red carded after bringing down Pierre Landry Kabore in their 2-2 draw in the Premiership with Hearts. Celtic were leading 2-1, and Trusty originally shown a yellow card by referee Stephen McLean, but the video assistant referee told him to get over and have a look at the screen, and then he decided to upgrade it from yellow to red. The league leaders Hearts went on to equalise through Claudio Braga and earned a point, which maintained their 6-point lead over the Hoops.
Okay, very good. So that is pretty much the football news from Cross Channel. But then closer to home, we've got a new addition to the Derry City squad.
Yes, indeed. A flying winger coming in from Atletico Ottawa. His name is Kevin Dos Santos. The 26-year-old travelled to Spain with the City squad last week and impressed head coach Tiernan Lynch. He won the Canadian Premier League title with Ottawa after winning the end-of-season playoffs. Might give Kevin Kilman a ring up about him.
Yeah. Now then, we've got an hour of rugby between 8 and 9 tonight. Jerry Thornley and Fiona Hayes on Monday Night Rugby. Andy Farrell has been out speaking at the Six Nations launch, Steve-O.
Yep, it's been confirmed today on ahead of that launch that Leinster Rugby said Jack Boyle would undergo a procedure on his Achilles tendon this week. That's after the prop sustained the injury in Saturday's URC win over Connacht at the Dexcom Stadium. So really disappointing from a personal level for Boyle, who was included in Andy Farrell's 37-man squad for this year's Six Nations Championship. Connacht's Billy Bowen has been called up in his place. Bowen was born in Kildare and is the grandson of former Ireland coach and player Mick Doyle, who was in charge for the Championship and Triple Crown win back in 1985. Of course, Ireland have several prop injuries heading into the Six Nations, but Farrell revealed at today's tournament launch in Edinburgh that Porter could be available. Andrew Porter, that is, could be available later in the competition. Farrell also expressed his disappointment for Boyle. Speaking to our own Susanna Mullen.
Jack Boyle obviously went down on Saturday. It's been kind of the headline over the weekend. What was your reaction to it, either watching or hearing?
Devastated for him because, you know, he'd have been disappointed not to get a game for us in the autumn, and he took that in the right manner and went back and played some unbelievable rugby for Leinster. So he would have been dying to get back into camp and hoping for a chance to kick off his international career and carry that form on at this level. So devastated for him.
Jack Boyle obviously went down on Saturday. Were you talking to him? I mean, how difficult is that for him personally, but then for the squad as well?
Yeah, I'm gutted for him. Obviously, there's been a few injuries at Loosehead, so what an opportunity it could have been. But I mean, it's the nature of the game at times. A few of us have put an arm around him, obviously, and checking in on him, because it is massive disappointment there. But, I mean, as I said, it's nature of the game, and there goes an opportunity for someone else. So there's still competition there between Michael Millen, Jeremy Lachman and Billy Bowen, who's a young prospect coming in. So excited to see what those guys are all about.
Yeah, Caelan Dara speaking after Andy Farrell there at Edinburgh a little earlier on. More on this, as I say, after 8 o'clock. Dermot's been in touch to say, as a Liverpool fan, I really hope Arsenal beat Manchester City to the league title, as they deserve one and definitely have the best squad in the league by far. Meanwhile, not producer Mick has been in touch again, saying measured approaches don't get you silverware. And Dermot Keenan on our YouTube says, Owen, are you worried for Arsenal's title challenge now? Yes. A United fan said to me today that 30 years ago they were 14 points behind Newcastle and still won the league. I think he's deluded. You never know. That's the one thing. That's the big question we're not asking tonight. Can Manchester United win the league this season under
Can I just say as well, who does not want to see Yuri Tiedemans being carried on the shoulders of Unai Emery with the Premier League trophy at the end of the season?
Arsenal fans.
To be fair, I wouldn't begrudge Unai Emery. You know, obviously I'm an Arsenal fan. I want Arsenal to win it. But if it's not to be Arsenal, Villa and Unai Emery, I think he did a smashing job at Arsenal his first time around with a bang average squad. So, yeah, if it's not to be Arsenal, Aston Villa.
The ultimate secret of Unai Emery winning beating Arsenal to the title with Aston Villa.
We will be covering Manchester United in greater depth after 9 o'clock. Andy Mitten is going to join myself and Keith on the football show. Our number, by the way, is 087-9180-180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp message. You're welcome back to Monday Nights Off the Ball. It's Owen and Keith Tracy and Stephen Doyle here in studio, and for the first time this inter-county season, very happy to say hello to our Gaelic Games correspondent Tommy Rooney. Evening, Tommy.
Hi Owen, hi fellas.
Loads to discuss over the course of the weekend. Let's hand it over to Steve-O. What is the top story if you're picking between them all?
Well, let's start down in the kingdom, the beautiful kingdom where Kerry beat Roscommon 218 to 120, but there was a hooter controversy. The home team in Killarney lined up a last free from midfield with 5 seconds of the 70 minutes remaining, and the side's level 217 to 120. Sean O'Shea sticks it in the mixer. Tomás Kennedy got possession before fisting over the winner. The question was, did he release the ball before the hooter sounded? Brendan Coley awarded the point and the All-Ireland champions celebrated. Here is what the Kerry boss, Jack O'Connor, said after that. Jack,
5 seconds, that's what he had left, and it was great awareness by Shawnee just to pike it in by Tomás, obviously, to win it in the first place and just get rid of the ball so quickly, you know, shows his basketball background. He'd be well used to that from the shot clock and the basketball. So delighted for Tomás. No, it was a big day for him in front of a nice crowd here in Killarney, and good step on the road to his future career.
Jack, we mentioned it, I suppose, with the media, the written press inside. One rule, and you spoke to me in the past about it, and it's probably caused huge problems down the road. Mike Breen trying to give the ball as respectfully as can. Ball hit out of his hand. But it's more about the rule, it's not about the referee.
No, Brendan Coley is a top-class ref, but this rule is just... it's just a ridiculous rule. I've said it from the very beginning. I think I've been consistent on it from day one. If the ball should be placed down the ground, and it gives time for the player then to back off and whatever. You know, referees should be able to see when there's gamesmanship going on, and that was absolutely crazy today. I mean, we'd feel very, very aggrieved if that cost us the game to me, because Mike was genuinely trying to give the ball back, and he held it out and someone slapped it out of his hand. So look, it has caused bother all the year. It caused bother in the club championship, and it will have to be changed. I can see no other way out of it.
Yeah, speaking to Tim Moynihan of Radio Kerry there, Jack O'Connor. Tommy, you can come in on either of these points. Can we just start with the hooter? Because it feels like we've spoken about the 50-metre rule quite a lot. Yesterday was the first example of there's a strong case to be made that actually we didn't know how good we had it last year with the hooter. This alternative is going to throw up many more situations like this over the course of this National League.
Yeah, and I happened to be in Cusick Park towards the end of the league last year, Owen, and you might remember Connor Duke scoring a worldy of a goal on the hooter. And some of the word afterwards, the Westmead analysts brought out laptops after the game. Mark McHugh, who's now manager, was the coach under Dermot McCabe, were fuming. They thought they had proof that the goal was scored after the hooter went off. The word that kind of filtered through afterwards was that... technically the goal should have been allowed, but that the hooter actually went off a little later in the stadium because the equipment in the stadium wasn't strong enough. And I think that's one of the problems we have here. If we're going with the hooter, the hooter in the stadium has to match with the hooter on the TV, which caused a bit of consternation at home. I was watching on from home and I was like, I understood there can be sometimes a little bit of variance, but there was a couple of seconds of variance there. And yeah, like if we're using this sort of equipment, we can't be skimping on it. We've got to invest in it. We've got to actually put the actual investment into it. I personally think as a general rule, ending the game with a hooter, bit of a countdown, I think it adds to the drama. I think it adds to the bit of magic. A buzzer beater that went under the radar was Mayo's Jack Kearney.
Yeah.
Before half all tail. An absolutely gorgeous score. That doesn't really happen anywhere else in the game, other than the fact that there's a bunch of kids that you can hear. Mayo GA, after sharing a clip there of a bunch of kids counting down from five in the ground. They must have isolated the audio. It's class. And Kearney just slices over this beauty. And I like it. Again, the game is in a state of evolution at the minute, a state of flux. It's constantly evolving. There may be little tweaks needed, but I don't really fully get why they changed what we had last year after that David Clifford point laid on. I think that kind of people wanted to change it, and it's gone back to what it was originally. And look, we'll get there eventually. I don't know if we're there yet.
The thing about the hooter is that last year's one was an easier format to police correctly. If you want to get this off to a tee and you want to be sure that you're not going to screw things up on the biggest day of all, then Gaelic football is going to flirt with the idea of a conversation about dun-dun-dun video refereeing. The only way you can get this correct, the only way you can be 100% correct yesterday, is if you can actually consult a video NBA style about has the ball left his hand before or after the hooter. And I don't think anybody wants to get stuck into a conversation about VAR or a TMO when it comes to Gaelic games. We've had enough in other sports, and this might be the first time where people actually start to talk about a need for a video ref if we have more of these situations. And that is my strongest argument as to why last year's hooter was a better version. For the record, Brendan Cawley did get it correct yesterday with the hooter question, but I had to go back and over, forward and back, and pause it exactly when the ball left Kennedy's hands. And that's what a referee is going to have to do if they want to make correct decisions.
Yeah, and I think you're right, okay? And I haven't really fully had the chance to pick apart why they reverted back or what the exact reason was that they reverted back to it. But, you know, in December or November, it was announced that, you know, they were going to go to the original proposal of each half concluding as soon as the hooter is sounded, only exceptions being if the ball is in flight or a free, a 45 or a sideline kick is due to be taken and they can only be direct shots on goal. So look, I think you're right on. I think we're going to see far more of this. We had it last year with Meath and Westmeath, that last second equaliser that, you know, you could argue it either way, but I think it was actually slightly after the hooter. And then yesterday, Tomás Kennedy, majestic score, phenomenal skill to fetch the ball over the head in the way he does. Like, Keith Tracy, I just want to let you in on something here. I've asked James O'Donoghue and Paddy Andrews before to build a forward, okay? Like, if you could build your dream Gaelic footballer as a forward, where would you start? What would you start with? They started with the hands. The handling is so important for a forward in Gaelic football. Paul Gainey said the same thing in Dingle last week. And young Kennedy, whatever else he has, he's got the hands to be a top quality Gaelic footballer. So we'll wait and see their own. But he definitely deserves a bit of kudos for that score. Roscommon, of course, crushed. They were so good, missing so many players. And so it kind of taken away from them in the last seconds. But they'll learn a lot from it. I don't think there's anyone's season's ending on the opening weekend.
Yeah, Darragh Craig was very impressive for Roscommon yesterday as well, and it's one of those. I know they've got to play Monaghan this weekend in what looks to be a bit of a relegation battle already. Winner, that's going to be in a really good position, but then we could so easily be talking about a Roscommon win in Killarney today either. What we'll do is we move on to the events in Salt Hill yesterday, Steve-O. A great win for Mayo against the old rival.
Yeah, indeed. Andy Moran picked up a win over Neighbours Galway in his first competitive game as Mayo boss. His Chargers outlasted their rivals, coming out on top by 218 to 318 points at Pearse Stadium. They joined Kerry at the top of the Division 1 standings after the All-Ireland champions edged past Roscommon by a point, as we mentioned. Just to point people towards our social media channels as well, because there's a lovely interview with Jonathan Higgins and Andy Moran there, so we just didn't have time to get into our script tonight. Meanwhile, Monaghan, no match for Armagh, falling to a 22-point loss. And then on Saturday night, Donegal edging out Dublin in their Division 1 clash in Croke Park. Shane Malone's goal was enough to beat Gerbrennan's side by 120 to 20 points. Donegal boss Jim McGuinness took questions from the GA writer, Cathal O'Kane. But first, our own Tommy Rooney.
Jim, you're back in Croke Park. First time since last July. So you get a win and then Kerry next week with Electus Park. What happened last summer? Very quickly now in the new year.
Say that again, sorry?
Will it let you park what happened last summer?
We've already parked it. That game's long gone. That game's long gone. We're heading for 2026 now and focusing on that, you know. So now there's no issues there, there's no residue there. We're back on the horse, as they say, and we've won our first game and we'll see what happens next weekend.
What was the biggest lesson you took from the entire 25 season into what you might need in 2026?
Listen, that's a conversation that would last a half an hour, I think. You know, there was so much. It was a long season for us, and there were so many games, and there were so many big games we played in. You know, there's a hell of a lot of learnings you take from it, you know, positive and negative, that you're trying to bring in to the game, and the game's changing all the time as well, and rules and all that type of stuff, you know. So, no, listen, we just take it game at a time. That's where we're at, game at a time, and looking forward to the next one now, which is next Sunday.
You mentioned the word zonal there. Sorry to take you back again, but after the All-Ireland final last year, there was so much talk about the zonal defence and the way they just played that day. And I suppose we haven't had a chance to talk to you properly about it in the aftermath. And like, do you look back on that now and think that you could still win an All-Ireland playing with that set up, that style of defence, or do you think that you will have to change? Well,
we just played the last 25 minutes zonally.
Yeah, I'm asking. I'm not saying you can't or you can't. I'm just asking.
I don't have an opinion. You guys are the ones that have the opinions. You have the opinions. We just do our work. That's the bottom line. Like, I don't listen to anybody. I just coach the team. So there's loads of opinions out there, and there's loads of people saying loads of things, you know, but at the end of the day, that doesn't have any impact in my thinking whatsoever. I don't listen to those people. Most of them have never coached at inter-county level. Most of them have never stood on the sideline. Most of them never won anything as a coach. So I don't take counsel from people. I only take counsel from people that have been there and done that. If it's an All-Ireland winning manager or a top coach, I'll listen to them and I'll listen to what they have to say. But I don't listen to anybody outside of that, because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Otherwise, they should be on the sideline competing against me. So there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of talk. We're going to do what we feel is right every single day, and that won't change. And just because 10 people say that's what happened and that's the right thing, that doesn't mean that's going to change our mind the next time round. If we feel it's the right thing to do, that's what we'll do. That'll always be the case. You cannot have a situation where outside influences impact on your group, and thankfully that has been the case, you know. So that's football, like, you know, and I learned that a long time ago. You know, there's loads and loads of people with opinions. There's loads of people that have opinions that are having that opinion to have a go at you. There's loads of people that have the opinion because that's what they believe. All of that's in the mix, but at the end of the day, you know all that and you don't listen to that. You just get on with going to the pitch, trying to coach the lads and trying to win football games, and that's not going to change in the summer. And if you want to run with that, or anybody else want, let run away with it, but it'll not impact on how we approach games. Definitely not. You know, we played 11 games last year and nobody was complaining. Do you know what I mean? Like, so we'll decide what's right and we won't be listening to anybody else.
Like a coiled spring, Tommy. He was waiting to deliver that for a couple of months, I dare say. Brilliantly executed. Are we buying what he's selling?
There's a lot in it, Owen, and I will tell you, like, the rain was hitting you sideways in 6 different directions in Croke Park the last day, and getting that oration. And he's not, Jim McGuinness isn't just talking to the press there, you know. He's speaking to his people in Donegal, and all you need to do is take a little glance at the Facebook comments to see that the army is galvanised. All the Donegal fans have rode in behind him. Look, as we mentioned earlier on, the game is evolving all the time. You're trying to figure out what works best, right? Kerry, in that All-Ireland final, were absolutely unbelievable that day. You know, on another day, maybe something goes slightly askew and Kerry's 15 minutes doesn't go as well. And maybe we're looking at it totally different. Maybe we're talking about the need to have a zonal defence. And I don't know the exact answer. I'm not sure McGuinness knows the exact answer yet. But one thing was for sure, we had to try and get the answer. And I don't think he was ever going to tell us what he really thinks. I think we're going to have to keep an eye on what way they set up across the year, see how it evolves, see what different tweaks are coming into their system and other counties across the country. Because I think we're all trying to figure out this new game and the best ways to take advantage of it and win games of football.
Okay. Was he having a go at the actual, like, journalists who report on games, or was it the opinion writers who have had their assessment of the final from last year?
I couldn't tell you, Stephen. I think, you know, there's a lot in that.
Well, it was basically, like, because the way I looked was Cara O'Kane asked him a question and he wants to know, he's like, journalists go there to try and be enlightened by the men who have the knowledge. I think it was a fair enough question. He just asked him a question and then McGuinness goes off and just basically he's having a go
at people maybe whose opinions he doesn't really...
To be fair, I think, and I don't know exactly what he's referring to, but there would have been a cohort of people across the country that would have taken a little bit of glee in the fact that Jim McGuinness, the Oracle, as he's seen in some places, was beaten, you know? And like, you even remember David Clifford's words after the All-Ireland final. We felt Jack O'Connor was disrespected in the build-up. I'm paraphrasing here. Mm. We felt he was disrespected in the build-up because of how much coverage the opposition's manager had received in the build-up. So there is this big thing about Jim McGuinness and how much he brings to the table. So I don't know exactly who he's referring to, but I think, as Owen said, it was probably bubbling up for a couple of months. Yeah. And he got it off his chest.
I think with these sorts of things, it's always a safe first port of call is always to see what has Joe Brawley written about the person in question. And he was super critical of Jim McGuinness. Like, let's not beat about the bush here. It's probably Joe Brawley that he's talking about. I mean, if he was here...
He's coached teams, though. He has stood on the line.
Not to win in All-Ireland, though. That's the thing, yeah, which, true. To be fair, limits the amount of people that you want to listen to two other inter-county managers... Currently working, three inter-county managers currently working in the game, Mickey Hart, McGeaney, and Jack O'Connor, the only three other managers who've won All-Irelands.
In fairness, like, I do think maybe I wouldn't take that too literally either. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I heard people saying this morning, his poor coaches, his poor selectors, and on other podcasts as well, you know, he's not going to listen to anybody else. I don't know if that's the case. I don't think he can run an inter-county team in that kind of regard.
I think McGuinness is a absolutely brilliant manager and coach, and he's proved that over the years. He's nothing else to prove, really, but it would be great if they just gave us a little bit of knowledge, you know, just...
Yeah, Tommy, just very quickly on the Mayo performance against Galway yesterday. To be honest, actually, looking at the Galway-Mayo game, Galway's approach was as interesting, if not more interesting, than Mayo, given how direct they went. Kerry as well had, I think, 4 advance marks yesterday. Maybe this is the year where teams are going to go a lot more direct. Mayo, though, brilliant.
I think it was just a brilliant game of football, Owen, and there's a couple of caveats, right? And there's no way Andy Moran's getting carried away. Yes, the rest of us might get a bit carried away with Mayo, or the county might, like the noise in Saltill yesterday was class to hear. It's a long time since we heard a Mayo crowd rocking and getting behind the team in the manner in which they did. Because they could get excited. The kicking into the corner to Tommy Conroy, the likes of a young Darragh Byrne breaking through, the manner in which Jack Kearney and Jordan Flynn played with a little bit of panache and off the cuff, Ryan Dunne had 11. Defensively even, they were exciting to watch because they were giving up bloody goal chances, and we had to see 3 brilliant saves from Rob Henley, Sam Callanan slipping on his hole after Shane Walsh sold him a dummy, and recovering back to make an incredible block as well late on. It was glorious stuff. It was rock and roll football. And what I would say is that, as I mentioned earlier, Moran's not getting carried away. After the game, he said, we learned so much from the first couple of weeks. We will learn so much from today. They scored 3-18. James said on the pod yesterday, he was effusive in his praise for Mayo. I don't remember, and I went, look, and I can't find the last time Mayo kicked 3-18 in a game of football. But they also conceded 2-18, and we're talking about a Galway team that were down a clatter of all-stars, a load of main footballers, the squad going through a bit of flux. And I'm telling you now, Pádraig Joyce, like a lot of managers that lost games really closely at the weekend, we had 3 draws out of the 15 games, and out of the other 12 games, 7 were decided by a score. I don't think anyone would be too devastated if their team put in a performance in the manner in which Galway did. Positives, negatives, a couple of the younger lights showing off glimpses, like, where are these footballers coming from? Phil McDonough was exceptional. I watched Phil McDonough with Mike Cullen, thinking raw talent, bit of potential. He looked right at home there in Salt Hill the last day. Oisín McDonagh was very good as well. And young Kieran Mulhern making mistakes, right? But also making things happen. So, you know, watch the space with Galway. There's a couple of younger stars breaking through as well.
We got to move on to the hurling, Steve.
Yeah, I should mention the other two games on Saturday on as well. Meath 19 points to Derry's 113 at Croke Park, and also Tyrone 216 to 119 against Kildare in Omagh. So, as you say, on moving on to the hurling, the Cork Hurlers impressed on the new boss, Ben O'Connor. They smashed Waterford 325 to 117 in their first game of the National Hurling League Division 1A. Declan Dalton, William Buckley and Alan Connolly with the rebel goals. Rory O'Hagan spoke to the new Cork boss O'Connor after that.
Yeah, just happy to have it out the way, if I'm being honest. A lot of talk about it during the week, and just because it was our first day out, like, so just delighted that we got a performance out of the boys. Conditioning the field made a difference, and fine day was nice to see as well, like, so it just made it a bit easier. I suppose, look, Waterford were under strength, shorter belly, gunner lads, Look, we can only be what's in front of us and delighted for some of the lads there now.
The fast start would really have set the nerves if there were any, I suppose.
Yeah, there was no nerves either. No nerves. And I suppose we'd have 8 or 9 fast points. And I suppose it set the tone for the rest of the in that period. I don't think we'd any wide either. So shooting was good. Boys running into position to play the ball around with. So a good start for first hour.
That's an excellent performances all around the field, winning Buckley in particular, a fantastic game.
Yeah, very good performances. I suppose we were lucky enough that we had 9 or 10 of the more experienced fellas and we were able to fire in the few younger fellas with them as well to help them out. And not that they needed any helping out there today, but it's nice to do that and nice to be able to put on 5 subs in the second half so we can give them all a bit of game time.
Also yesterday, Kilkenny were the 20-point to 16-point winners in Division 1A against Offaly. It was Clare 318 to Dublin's 122 in Division 1B. On Saturday, Tipperary 121 to 116 against Galway in Division 1A. And then in Division 1B, it was Wexford 113 to Antrim's 112. And then Carlow 218 to Down 111.
Yeah, that Wexford Antrim game and the conclusion, a source of great controversy, and maybe Antrim right to be up in arms, although it was an absolutely brilliant penalty to win it in the end for Wexford. There was an argument over ball positioning, then the ball moved closer to goal, and then afterwards, Davy Fitz, the Antrim manager, not happy at all. In Cusack Park, Tommy, Tony Kelly doing Tony Kelly things, a big 1-1 at the end. He scores 1-3. Their first league win in Ennis in nearly 2 years, which is an astonishing statistic. What stuck out to you from the hurling weekend?
Clare had a pretty strong team out. You know, as far as I'm aware, there were no debutants that started anyway, anywhere close to it. So really strong outfit. Dermot Stritch come off the bench and knocked over a nice point as well. So he's one to keep an eye on from Clare this year. Would have won a county title with Clonara a couple of years ago. So, but the Dubs were right in the mix in that game and they'd have felt like they could have came away with something. Impressed with Ben O'Connor, from what I've heard and read from him in the last couple of weeks. I haven't had a chance to chat to him as Cork manager yet, but like Cork, I suppose, much the same way in Donegal, maybe have parked it, or they're telling us they've parked it. There's a bit of residue from last year's All-Ireland final, as we very well know, that you're going to have to work through and get out of the system. So I think Cork getting off to a good start was important as well. And as you mentioned, the bit of drama there with Antrim and Wexford, there's always something.
Always something. Tommy Rooney, great stuff. Thanks for hopping on this evening.
Fellas, good luck tonight. Thanks for the chat.
Cheers. Let's round things up, Steve. We've got tennis, we've got American football.
Yes, defending women's champion Madison Keys is out of the Australian Open after losing to Jessica Pegula, her fellow American, in the fourth round. Iga Swiatek booked her place in the quarterfinal with a straight sets win over Madison Inglis. A fifth seed Yelena Rybakina is through to a Grand Slam quarterfinal for the first time since Wimbledon in 2024 after beating Elise Mertens. The defending men's champion Jannik Sinner defeated fellow Italian Luciano Darderi in 3 sets to book his last 8 spot. 5th seed Lorenzo Musetti beat American 9th seed Taylor Fritz to set up a quarterfinal against the 24-time Grand Slam champion Novak Djokovic, who received a walkover when Jakub Mensik withdrew. The number 1 seed Aryna Sabalenka and Carlos Alcaraz in the men's will be in quarterfinal action tomorrow, and play will be impacted by the extreme heat once again. Temperatures expected to reach 45 degrees in Melbourne, so the roofs of the show courts are expected to be closed. And what about those Seahawks? Seattle Seahawks will face New England Patriots in Super Bowl 60 after claiming a thrilling victory over the Los Angeles Rams on Sunday. The NFC Championship game was a shootout in Seattle, with Seahawks quarterback Sam Darnold and Rams counterpart Matt Stafford both throwing 3 touchdown passes before the hosts held on for a 31-27 win. Meanwhile, defenses dominated the AFC Championship game as the Patriots ground out a 10-7 win in a blizzard at the Denver Broncos.
This was absolutely insane. The conditions flipped from halftime to the third quarter and fourth quarter, where presumably on the pitch the players could barely see the ball. I do wonder, this is a question that I had, and it might have come up in other podcasts or maybe even on the television broadcast last night, but I presume American football teams are so well resourced that they're actually practicing in blizzard conditions, because it's something that we see every year, although last night was particularly atrocious, and it just became a case, as you say, of a defence oriented game, and throwing the ball was one of the most stupid things you could do. A very familiar feeling though of it being a tough game to play in, and the Patriots coming out on top. So a record 12th Super Bowl, I think, for the New England Patriots. Will that be something that you'll get into now next Sunday week, Keith?
Nah, there's too much fluff for me.
Too much fluff?
Yeah, too much fluff. There's not enough action. There's a lot of waiting and seeing, isn't there?
It's not all part of the enjoyment that you know you're made to wait just for that sweet action.
I watch a football game that's 90 minutes and you get a couple of little action points here or there, and I'm hanging on for that. So
insert Arsenal joke there.
Yeah, insert Arsenal joke.
We had a great halftime show, I remember, last year. Who's doing halftime this year, Alan?
It's Bad Bunny this year.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Who?
Bad Bunny.
Bad Bunny?
Yeah, you're not familiar with Bad Bunny.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, go home, listen to some Bad Bunny and come back to us on another day, Keith. Are you a fan of reggaeton?
Who?
Reggaeton. The genre of which Bad Bunny represents.
Didn't even know it was a genre. I thought you said reggae.
You've obviously never been to Dicey's. Where is it? Dicey's on a Wednesday night?
Not in the last 10 years.
Right. Wow, you've got a lot of culture to explore before you come back into us. Go listen to some Bad Bunny. New album is pretty good. His 2022 album is probably his best.
Bad Bunny, this is a male.
This is a male, yeah.
For some reason, I pictured a female when I said Bad Bunny.
How presumptuous of you.
Yeah, how
Bad
presumptuous.
Bunny. He's from Puerto Rico. He's one of the most successful artists in the world. One of the most listened to artists in the history of music.
Reggaeton.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention wrestling, says Emma. So obviously, your cultural zeitgeist is not covered.
Let's do it off the ball. Watch WWE. Party reggaeton night up in Dicey's.
We'll do a listening party first on Bad Bunny, and then we'll do a Super Bowl.
Not having
watch
social media, that's what I've missed out on.
That is what you missed out on. It's high art, Keith. Listen, we'll give you an hour off. You're going to come back to us for the football show after 9 o'clock. Thanks for popping in, Keith. Stephen Doyle, thank you as ever.
Cheers.
For our extended Monday news round, we'll take a quick break.